there was a book that crossed the desk a little while ago, and as soon as it did, I knew we had to have its author here on the broadcast with us to do a little bit of talking, because we hear things from time to time about religious cults and their influence and the kinds of things that happen while people are inside these things. And I think on the national scale, the one that's made the most news over the last couple of years is the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, a sort of offshoot of the early Mormon church. And the fact that they have been involved in court battles, and there was that case where they took all of the kids out of their compound and eventually had to give them all back. But there were all sorts of allegations of sort of cultish behavior around them, and it got folks interested once again. But the fact of the matter is, there are groups and organizations that would qualify, according to the 8 steps, as a cult all across the country that go by all sorts of different names. And one of them is apparently a group that's called the Church of God Reformation. I believe I have the name of that right. And we're going to bring in Bernie Toholke, who was a member. Restoration is not Reformation. The Church of God Restoration. And Bernie Toholke was a member of it for about 6 or 7 years and has given us now the book Torn Asunder. And Bernie, thanks a lot for being with us on Overnight America.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's our pleasure. I want to talk, first of all, before we get into what happened to you when you joined the church, what were you like before? I mean, who was Bernie Toholke before you got involved in the Church of God Restoration?
I was somebody that was always looking, seeking for fundamentalist teaching, something that would provoke me, to interest me, to draw me closer to what I felt God wanted us to do. And so I became susceptible to that, vulnerable to cult abuse.
But what was your daily life like? I mean, were you a church-going person on a regular basis?
Yes. I was a weekly churchgoer, maybe twice a week, whenever there was a church service, midweek service, and Sunday service, and always seeking, always striving to do better.
And had you gone to a number of different denominations and different churches, or was there one that spoke to you before this one did?
I went through several different ones, not really church hopping, but looking for something conservative, something where the people are real.
Church hopping, I like that. And this all happened. You were a resident of the state of Wisconsin and living in a sort of a semi-rural environment, right?
Yes, northwestern Wisconsin.
And a log cutter. I mean, that was the work you did.
That's the work. I was a logger.
So all of a sudden, you start to hear about this Church of God Restoration. When was the first time that it came to your attention?
I think it was about 1995.
Did you know anything about them at all before that?
There was a similar group, a Church of God. First of all, they don't believe that that there's other Church of Gods out there. They believe everybody else is Babylon. They're the only right ones. And so when I first met them, they didn't say that out loud, but that was their core context, their core belief.
Even though they themselves grew out of another wing of the Church of God.
True.
And they had only been around at that point, as I understand it, for about 15 years. Wasn't it 1980 that they sort of incorporated?
Yes. That's about when the leaders of the group pulled out of it. And the leader was actually a drug addict for 19 years.
Danny Lane.
Yes.
Talk about who he is and what his influence is over the church, because he was not a resident of the same area, correct?
No. He came out of Oklahoma somewhere. Mm-hmm. He was a California addict. He lived on the streets. He was a suicide victim. He tried chopping his arms off one time with a meat cleaver. They found him. He was drained of blood, and they revived him back and forth. So he was actually a character that had been a lot of trouble. Heroin addict is what he was. And all of a sudden, he met God, supposedly back in 1980 or so, and he started, no matter where he went, he was kind of like a troublemaker. And no church was actually good enough for him, and he was striving to make something for himself. And he found, finally, some gathering, a few followers to him, and I came along in about 1995, and he was just, up in this area, part of the country, up in northern Wisconsin, propagating, proselyting for individuals. And I did not know his past. I didn't know his history. I wasn't warned, nothing, and I fell for it. And next thing, my family was involved in it, and my wife really got involved in it. And when that happens, that's when things go bad, because when you finally wake up and, wait a minute, this is not right, well, I'm not leaving, that's
right.
Where So
now, when you compare this to other organizations and other cults, sometimes it's just a matter of being that far into that sort of fundamentalist realm that it all does stem back to religion. And then there are other ones mm-hmm. where there's an obvious money flow and it goes right to the guy who started the cult or a flow of women or whatever it happens to be. Did you notice any of that in the initial offing, that there was money involved or anything else going on?
In the initial, no. Everything was so kind, so loving. It actually goes, the money flow actually goes to the individuals that are interested in it. I mean, they paid for my camp meeting, the first year's camp meeting. Oh, no, there's no charge, nothing. And, you need help? All the people were there helping you. So it's a drawing tactic of pulling the people in.
And it goes even further than that. I mean, as you describe it in the book, they almost made you feel like a rock star. It was like they were waiting for you. Oh, it's Bernie.
Yes. I remember the very first year that you got to come down. I just met the people. You got to come down to the camp meeting. It's down in Ohio, and I don't know if I can. I can't afford it. And, well, we got the money. You come down here, we'll pay for all your gas money. I got down there, and they paid for everything. And here's your dorm. Here's your cabin for your family. And who are you? Hi, I'm so-and-so. And what's your? I'm Bernie. Oh, Bernie from Minnesota. You know, I seemed like a celebrity.
And they all told you they were praying for you and things like that. And these are people you had never met before.
True.
So that's got to be, among other things, just a terrific ego stroke, you know, on your way in. You mentioned that they've been kind of helping you out, and now they think you're the coolest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that affect you in terms of, you know, drawing you in? How long a process was that before you just said, that's it, this is my path, this is where I'm supposed to be?
Okay, before I really discovered it, I was with it maybe 4 years, and there was a minister that came up and actually moved up to northern Wisconsin, so mm-hmm. we're not isolated.
Right.
We got basically 2, 3, 4 families together and worshiped there for a while, and all of a sudden Danny Lane pulled a plug on us. Nope, everybody's got to move. This is not working out. And he makes the final decision if it's going to work or not or what we're going to do next. And so the minister no longer is with the system. I am glad he got out of it, but he feels so bad. Every time I call or something, he basically cries on the phone. I'm so sorry, you know. So.
And you didn't have a choice. I mean, they said if you want to stay with us, you've got to move.
True.
So, I mean, at this point, again, describe a little bit more about your life. You were married.
I was married. I had 7 children. I got involved probably when I had about 6 children, I believe, and I had 1 more after that. Or 2 more. I think I had 2 more after I met him. All of a sudden, it was time to move. The pastor that was up in the area moved on, and now I was constantly nagged by my wife. We got to move. We got to move. We got to move. And she was all caught up in it. At that point, I did not have anything contingible that I could hang on to and say, no, this is not right. And so inside of me, I was fighting. I don't feel like moving on. And the closest church there was down in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the opposite corner of the state, southeastern side.
Yeah, it's just north of Chicago, right?
Yeah, just north of Chicago, south of Milwaukee. And that's where all the trouble began. Once I moved there, it was within 2 months. This pastor that was in Kenosha area, Pat O'Shea, he was a totally different character. He did whatever it took, you know. He would cut you down. No, you can't go up north. You could not see your relatives. Yeah, you know, my boys, they didn't want to wear a vest. It was part of the dress code according to their schedule. I don't wear a vest. You know, well, I'm an outsider already. I was a dissenter to them.
Just because you wouldn't wear a vest.
True.
All right, we're going to talk some more about it and about what the belief system is that you were running into and going over with this pastor. Stick with us, and again, the book is Torn Asunder. We'll tell you a little bit more about it. It's Torn Asunder, In the Jaws of a Cult, and Bernie Toholke, its author, is with us, and we'll talk a little bit more about what happened with his experience with the Church of God Restoration. As we continue on through this Wednesday morning, John Grayson here with you, and you're on Overnight America.
More is coming your way. Overnight America with John Grayson.
Past the hour. Overnight America continues. John Grayson here with you. And our guest this hour is the author of Torn Asunder in the Jaws of a Cult. Bernie Toholke is with us and talking about his time with the Church of God Restoration. And it all took place in Wisconsin. And I want to back up just a little bit, Bernie, to the time in northern Wisconsin and talk about the relationship that you had with your kids and their relationship to the church. Because as you describe it, it was a religious household, to be sure. But you sound like kind of a fun dad. I mean, you liked goofing around with the kids.
Oh yeah, I brought a horse into the house one time. Children were just hysterical. A full grown horse and the head is almost touching to the ceiling. That was exciting. I'd romp around with them. I put gloves on my hands and my feet and jump around like a monkey and give them piggyback rides. The children were always laughing. When I come home, hey, daddy's home, and everybody comes rushing to the door. This is a fun guy. So,
but the church's attitude, as you found out later on, toward children, is one of not only strict discipline, but in many cases, beatings.
Abuse.
And yeah, exactly. And this isn't something that you saw right away.
No, I did not see it right away. I knew they had a firm teaching on, you know, discipline. For a while, even I got caught up in it myself until I went to the Ohio meeting. And this was like 4 years. I already moved down to Kenosha is when I first saw the beating. I saw the death. I saw different things like that. I went down to Ohio, and my wife was all caught up in it. And that was what kept me continued in there for another 3 years or so.
One of the things that, you know, cults tend to do is, as you describe, is isolation. They get you away from your family, away from everybody who's not directly involved, and they cut off all ties to the outside world. So when you first started to see, talk about that first incident where you saw a child being beaten, and what did it mean to you? I mean, did any lights go on with you at that point?
Okay. In the first beating that I was a part of, I had doubts about it. I did not like the child abuse. Their teaching is that the child has to lay across the chair, the couch, to, you know, lay across. You got to have your spankings. There may be an 8-year-old child. They get 8 swats. If the child cannot lay across the chair, then you grab them, wrestle them, beat them a little bit, put them across, lay across the chair. They have to do it on their own. Well, I couldn't do it. I hand you a stick. I lean over the bed, and there's no way. You'd have to wrestle with me.
Right.
Might get a whooping, but you'd have to wrestle me. And anyway, I couldn't quite stomach that part of it because I couldn't do it. And so I got down to Ohio there, and the church services always are 2 hours. I sat down, and all of a sudden I look up, the song service was still going, and my wife is not there, and my Stevie, my son, my 5-year-old son was not there. And I kind of looked out the back. It's an open pole barn style, you know. They can open up the doors and windows, and the side walls are all hinged on hinges, and I couldn't see them anywhere. Well, I just kept singing another song or two. All of a sudden, here comes my wife, sits down on the other side of me, and the children were always between, all 7 sitting between us. Now she's sitting, I need help spanking Stevie. I said, whoops, I knew exactly what it's all about.
Right.
And this means a beating. Well, haven't you spanked up some? No, you know what the church teaches. She was all 100% hung on it. Oh, my. If I make any opposition, I will be heading back to Wisconsin by myself because they'll break up the marriage. And I already witnessed several marriages at that time. I am just one of many marriages that they broke up.
Was that a fairly common thing to see as that the marriages were broken up by the church as a result of that exact thing, that it was all about the kids?
The children, or not submitting to some of the teachings. I mean, if they, oh, come on, a short sleeve shirt, I can wear this. Then they become excommunicated. And one man, because he wanted to go see his relatives, older man, 80-year-old man, Pat O'Shea, says, no, he's excommunicated because he keeps doing it against my will. You're not allowed to go anywhere. You can't see your relatives unless you have permission from the pastor.
And the beatings that you witnessed, the ones that took place, talk about the implements that were used, because it wasn't just being swatted with a hand.
No. It was usually dowels. Dowels are wooden round things that you buy in hardware stores or lumber yards and stuff like that. And the bigger the dowel, for the bigger the child. I saw my wife beat our children, anything from dowels to wooden sticks to shoes. She would grab a shoe in rage and beat them. Clothes hangers, wire, beating somebody with wire, come on. You know, belts, any kind of straps, any kind of cattle whipping. Danny Lane come back from a trip down in Mexico and brought back horse whips, and sold it on the campground to the parents to be able to use them on their children. That was a literal thing, horse whips.
That's just unbelievable. So while all of this is going on around you, you're becoming more and more disillusioned with what you see.
Yes.
But did you have anybody to turn to?
Nobody, because you don't know who to trust, who to say. There were a few times I mentioned something to my wife and found out that she got that information to the pastor so fast, but the next time, oh, so you got a problem with the church, huh? What? Well.
So your trust was being betrayed by your own wife?
Yes.
Now, I want to stop here and do a little definition of terms, because I'm sure right now there are people listening to this who may be shocked by it, but are still thinking, okay, well, that sounds like a very, very, you know, conservative fundamentalist religion. What's the difference? Where do you cross the line with that and become a cult in your eyes?
In my eyes, I believe when you start getting black and blue marks to the extent, you know, of what I witnessed, just plain abuse. I am not opposed to discipline. There's many forms of discipline, but when it crosses the line where children are getting black and blue in fear, just shaken, that is abuse. That is abuse. Other thing, as far as medical, I have no problem with divine healing. However, when you have a whole string of things where people are either dying or just remain sick, that's not divine healing. And so they just use that and condemn me. When they start condemning me, when I got pulled in it, because I bought my oldest son an inhaler, and I got pulled in the room, so you are not backing up your wife. I says, he could die from it. Well, they can die in the hospital too. I says, well, I know one thing, that in a hospital, if you had 10 people with appendix in there and they all go to the hospital, I believe all 10 of them come out of the hospital. However, sure, there might be somebody that dies of appendix in a hospital. However, I'd say if 10 people had appendix in this particular cult, and I didn't use cult at the time, church, I would hope there'd be one that survives, because I have not seen it.
Right, but you kind of doubt it. I mean, you would think that all 10 of them would be. And you actually witnessed that kind of a death very early on after you got to Kenosha. There was an older man who died, who a very simple medical procedure would have saved him, and they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, he was a man from Missouri somewhere, too. He came up, and he stayed with a cult, a church at that time is what I called it, and he lived downstairs in a room. And he had a heart attack, I believe, or a stroke. The oldest son came home, the assistant pastor's son came home and found him behind the couch. We were not home. We might have traveled up north, as far as I remember. But when we came home, the family, my whole family, we lived upstairs. Ralph Sell just had a stroke or something. Wow. Ooh. We saw him in the bedroom. He was out of it. He was incoherent.
Well, Bernie, hang on for us for just a second. We'll talk about what happened to him and what led to his eventual demise in a second. The book, again, Torn Asunder in the Jaws of a Cult. Bernie Toholke, its author, our guest. More coming up. You're on Overnight America. Six past the hour. Overnight America continues. John Grayson here with you, and we're talking about life inside a cult with a man who lived it. His name, Bernie Toholke, and the book is Torn Asunder in the Jaws of a Cult. You can get it at any of the online booksellers and any of the big bookstores as well. And Bernie, is there a better way than any other to get a hold of the book?
If they're driving right now and they can't write anything down, if they went to my website, I have links that goes right to Author House that printed it. Author House is the company. My website is ScrooedKenoshaStyle.com.
ScrooedKenoshaStyle.com, and there's a lot of information that we're talking about that's in the book and is also there on the website, including a lot of the legal battles that have been involved in this. But we were telling the story about you being in Kenosha and living in a house with a bunch of other people who were involved in the church, one of whom was this older gentleman who lived downstairs and at one point had a stroke while you and the family were out of town. What happened after that?
Well, when we came home in the evening, he was already in his bed, in his bedroom, and the church, the members all were taking turns, taking care of him. He was kind of incoherent. He was out of it. I think in a matter of 2-3 days he came to and he could actually talk, but one side was kind of paralyzed. He was being dehydrated. I remember very vividly where he would be laying in bed. Anytime you come into the house, you could hear him, water, water, you know, and just begging for water. Well, the church would give him a teaspoon. He could maybe take one teaspoon, give him a second teaspoon, he would throw it all up. He couldn't take it. He needed an IV. But no, that is medical attention. You do not put medical attention into somebody that's trusting the Lord.
And he had had none up until this point, no medical attention at all.
None.
So eventually, because of all of this and because of the complications involved, he did die.
Yes, about 2 weeks later, something like that, we got a knock on our door upstairs. Got a knock, hey, Brother Sal's just passed away. So we got dressed, my wife and I went downstairs, saw this dead man laying in the bed. I mean, there is a vision branded into my mind that I'll never lose. Saw the pastor, pretty much a pastor and his wife were there already. Pretty much a whole church came that lived right there in the Kenosha. We stood there, well, what do we do now? I remember very vividly Pat O'Shea calling out to California, to the main ringleader, the top pinnacle, Danny Lane. And, hey, Brother Danny, praise the Lord. Yes, amen. You know, and I was right there. I heard the conversation. You can piece the conversation together. Yes, okay, Brother Sales just passed away. Okay, now what do we do? Well, if we called, you never call the police. They've been through the legal process that when you call the police, you are risking the confrontation of being a homicide. However, if you call 911, that is the proper channel to do through. You have to call 911. Wow, okay. But if we call 911 now, that would bring the people here, and he would be getting CPR. We don't believe in that. That's medical attention. So you have to let the body cool down. And so we sat there for an hour, and I thought that was so strange. Just sitting there, just waiting and waiting. And finally, Pat O'Shea called about an hour later. It's still bedded in my mind. I was, one hand is on the phone, the other hand on the dead man's forehead. Brother Danny, yes, amen. Brother Sal's is cool to the touch. Okay, now call 911. Oh, is Bernie's children in the house? Yes. Take them next door to your house. So my sleeping children were carried over next door to the pastor's house, and the place filled up. Now call 911. The place filled up with policemen and morticianer and fire department. Everybody was there. The room was crowded. That was still strange. But what happened next was all of a sudden what really made me question. One of the they had cameras flashing on in the next room, and you could see all the backflash of the cameras. And one of the top policemen came out, and it was a little triangle. Pat O'Shea and I side by side, and a policeman looked right at Pat O'Shea, saying, it appears that the body's been dead for a little while. Why didn't you call 911 any sooner? And I thought, ooh, it's because of religious reasons, you know? But instead, Pat O'Shea just says, well, I was with him tonight, and he starts elaborating how he took his last breath and this and that, how his breathing was unsteady, and then he took a long breath, and I waited a while, and no other breath, and I knew it. And so I called the church, and the church had to get up, and we all came together, and we decided that what should we do now? And we decided to call 911, and evidently some time had gone by. He was lying through his teeth.
Yeah, and while he was on the phone with the leader of the cult trying to decide what they were going to do.
Yes.
Unbelievable. So, I mean, at that point, did you ever consider going to the police yourself and saying, hey, listen, this is what's really going on in here?
No, I was scared. I was scared. My children are involved. I didn't really, and the older man, and it took a couple of years to really reason it out, too. Like when I got out of the cult. When I came home, my wife was gone. This is the way I got out of the cult. I did not leave the cult. The cult rejected me. I got booted out, and my wife got pulled away from me. And for 2-3 years, I in some way, you still believe it. That's the mind control part of it. You believe that it's a true church? Am I fighting against the one true church like you've been programmed so many times? Am I going to go straight to hell? No, it can't be. And then you fall back and forth, and it's quite a struggle with the brain. Most people that leave this cult never straighten really back out again.
And your letter of excommunication is actually up on that website, screwedkenoshastyle.com. And so if folks want to read that, it's some interesting reading to be sure. But talk about that final confrontation when you tried to get you know, back in touch with your wife, and you were being told by the pastor, no, you can't do this, you're out.
Yeah, you need to get serious with God. It was like a Salvation War on the outside of the clothing. I mean, they could take it off anytime they want to. If you disagree with them, it's gone. You are unsaved and ridiculed. And I had the pastor point his finger right in my face. You think you're going to get the children? You will not get the children. Shrine's going to get the children. You know it's a woman's state. And I basically wrote my first chapter. Of it. You're going to lose everything. You will lose your house. You will lose your job. You will lose everything to Joe, and you will be a miserable man. You think you got your oldest two boys? No, they'll turn against you. And this went on and on. His finger was like a foot and a half from my face, just pointing, and the spit was flying in my shirt. I looked down my shirt. He's just venting everything on me. I was scared.
And he actually said you were going to be condemned to hell when you died.
Yes, yes. You will lose everything. You will be condemned to hell. Is that what you want? You know? Oh, yeah. And so the fear of somebody like that, and you're already programmed at the right one true church, that's what you're taught, but yet some of your emotion says, no, this is not, and yet, you know, right and wrong, and you're shaking, you're sweaty, you're just sick of the whole confrontation. My children were confronted just a few minutes before I was. And they were in the office for probably an hour. When they came out, their eyes were just tear shot, bloodshot. I mean, just from crying and stuff like that. I saw that happen so many times throughout that system. I was up in Canada in Manitoba area, and I looked in, and there was just a little slot where you could see somebody else in the room, and I kind of just peeked through the crack. Oh, that's one of the members, young teenage member. And there were like three pastors just ridiculing that individual. When they came out, they were tear shot. I saw that scene over and over again while I was in there. It is controlled by fear.
Well, Bernie, hang on for us one last time. We'll take our final time out, and we're going to talk about where Bernie is now, where the kids are now, and what the results of all of this is and how it ended up in the court system. We'll do all of that just ahead, 45 past the hour, and Bernie Toholke is with us. The book, again, is Torn Asunder, In the Jaws of a Cult and Screwed Kenosha Style is the website. So stick around. There is more to come this hour as Overnight America continues. John Grayson here with you tonight.
Shift workers of America, unite. It's Overnight America with John Grayson.
Past the hour. Overnight America continues. John Grayson here with you. Our conversation continues with Bernie Toholke, the man who has given us Torn Asunder in the Jaws of a Cult. Spent six or almost 7 years as a member of the Church of God Restoration, to which he now refers as a cult. And Bernie, let's talk a little bit about why the book. I mean, you went through this tremendous personal turmoil and religious turmoil. Why did you decide to put all this down on paper?
Okay, first of all, as far as my family is concerned, I think there's very little hope. I'm fighting a big legal battle. I pretty much lost my children. I have not seen them since last July. They had brainwashed the children to the point where they can cross their arms and say, Daddy, we don't want to go with you. And so they absolutely refuse because of fear, because they always have to go back to their mommy and the cult, and so therefore they will be abused if they don't answer that way. Now, as far as my family, it's kind of hopeless, but I always have a little bit of hope yet, but I'm doing this for protection of others. I feel sorry for all the families that I got tore apart. I am sometimes in touch with various of them where the husband or the wife and my spouse is in it, and I don't dare say anything. If they knew that I was talking to you, they're so in fear. If I talk to you, I will never see my children again, so they're going through the same thing. And there's a lot of people out there that might be attracted to it, and I want to expose the whole thing. I never had that benefit of being exposed. This is what they believe. This is what they're teaching. These are all their do's and don'ts and stuff like that. Oh, no, we don't teach any do's and don'ts. Well, when's the last time you did take your children to the circus, you know? The pastor might say, oh, no, we don't have any rules. Oh, we don't have that. Well, just go down that list. When's the last time you went and watched a movie or a video or a drama play or, you know, wore a color red or had a bike that had an orange stripe in it? You know, all these ridiculous rules that are there.
Or told a joke.
You can't tell a joke. I remember one time the crowd was kind of just milling around. I had a whole crowd in my house, cult members, and we were talking about the English language, where if you put the word in the wrong place, it just distorts everything. And I immediately thought of a joke, and I wanted to share it. And so I says, yeah, it's like that farmer that was fencing with the son, and the farmer hands the son a big hammer, and he grabbed the fence post, and he said, son, when I nod my head, hit it. You know, so he straightens out his post real good. Bam! Ow! Not my head.
Right.
and the whole crowd gave me the shunning, the silent treatment.
Because you had told a joke and broken the rules.
Yes.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just so much of this that went on, and you lived this for so many years. Now, are all of your kids still involved? All seven of them?
No, two of them came with me. The two of them.
The boys.
Were working with me. The two boys were working with me that day. And when we came home, Mommy was gone with a five because I wanted to go up north. My mom died in January. My family's getting back together again in March, 2 days later, to grieve over Mom and just reminisce. And we had a potluck dinner, and can you come? And I wanted to go, and I told that to my wife, and that's the day that she left. No, we do not have a good reason. We do not have permission from the pastor. I says, well, my family's getting together. I sure want to go. I says, I'm going to go out with my two boys. When we come back, I'd like to have a different answer. We left. We came back 2 hours later. She was gone. Never realized that's the last time I'd ever hug and kiss her.
Wow. Well, and you know, you compare it to some of the other the things that we have seen that have ended in awful conflagrations, like in Waco and mm-hmm. Guyana tragedy and all of that, and that hasn't happened. Would it surprise you if something like that happened involved in this church?
No, it would not surprise me. They're really, really strange. They are non-opposing, a confrontation, battle-oriented war, that type of thing. They're very anti there. They would not do any aggression like that, but they'll do everything besides that.
So, and have you heard anything? I mean, have you received threats or anything of the kind from them, or have they just cut you off from communication altogether?
They cut me off. They would not. My life is not in danger with them. Okay? They would not do it. Maybe from the court system, but not from them.
And where does it stand with the courts right now? Where are you?
Okay, I filed an appeal over a year ago in February of 2008. It's been sitting in a court of appeals doing nothing. I can't get it to move on. It is their turn to give the red-covered response, the red-collared brief, the respondent's brief.
Yeah.
That has not happened for over a year.
And what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Is it just to see your kids?
To see my children. To see my children and adjust my child support according to my income, not according to their assumptions. So, yeah, I'd like to see my children, and I tried making that. I have a psychologist that looked at the situation. One thing I would really like to stress on is if somebody could go to my website, anybody that's kind of in a shady, like the psychologist was, a little shady, well, it might be a little flaky and don't really know if it's a cult, go to my website, look up, is it a cult? That's the article. Once you get into that, there is at the top, I believe, some news clippings from their letter, and then listen to the message of judgments to come. That is a typical message. It was preached by a woman there that is a very high prominent person. She runs their paper, and she preached it. Listen to that message, and then tell me it is not a cult.
Yeah,
and not controlled by fear.
And read the book and the experiences in there, and again, do the same thing. The book is Torn Asunder in the Jaws of a Cult. Bernie Toholke, its author, and as we said, Screwed Kenosha Style is the website. It's got links to every place where you can get the book, and you can also get it online at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all of those places. And Bernie, it's a terrifying story, and I'm sad that anybody had to live this, and you sound like a great guy, but we do appreciate you spending some time with us tonight on the program and talking about it.
I loved it. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Pleasure was absolutely ours. There is more to come. We'll put the wraps on the hour just ahead and head into some more fun. And we'll also get into some open phones before too very long as Overnight America continues. It's early on a Wednesday morning.
More is coming your way. Overnight America with John Grayson.